In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Thank you for joining us today on the iSpy Radio Network, heard on 4 radio stations around Oregon and anywhere in the world via our station's live streaming. If you're a first-time listener, a special welcome to you. Here at iSpy, we're not a news show, we're a knowledge show. If you're trying to compete on news, well, that's temporary, and a lot of times you're facing better-equipped, larger organizations to try to beat them to the punch, and oftentimes you're simply just talking about what everyone else is talking about. But knowledge is a mine of infinite depth, and that's what we go after. We've been getting some concerns, though, from listeners about a subject that we've often talked about in the past, the effort to force the federal government to give control of federal lands to the states. So on today's show, we are checking in with Ken Ivory to address some of the worries that we've been hearing about. What about mining rights? Will these wilderness areas be thrown open for development? And what about the loss of our natural heritage? But here in Oregon, that control of state lands often has to do with the forests, whether to log them or not, and who should make those decisions? The environmentalists who need the psychological comfort of thinking they've somehow protected forests while they burn to the ground or are so infested with bugs and disease that they ought to be burned to the ground. Meanwhile, rural counties are starving, which for some reason doesn't figure into their need for psychological comfort. And to talk about Oregon's forests, I'd like to welcome now Nick Smith, who is the Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the health of our forests and the future of our rural forested communities. Nick, it's good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be on the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little bit more here about your organization. It says that you guys are a broad grassroots coalition that supports the need for active, sustainable forest management to provide stable county revenues and more jobs for our rural communities. You guys are trying to gain some support for Congress to pass a solution for our forests and rural communities. So that's kind of my nutshell description. Why don't you take it over from here and tell us a little bit more about what you guys do and why you do it?
Sure. Well, Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities was established in early March 2013, and what our mission is to advocate for more active management of federal forest land. And so, whether it's on the ONC forests in Western Oregon or the national forests and, on the east side and throughout the Northwest, we're trying to bring back a balance to how our federal lands are managed. And we believe that it's time to increase timber harvest. It's time to do the other types of management activities that aren't done on federal lands these days, whether it's restoration, post-fire salvage, and other activities that, one, restore the health of the forest, and two, create jobs in rural communities.
Well, and I like the idea that you're talking about restoring the balance, because I think when people look back at some of the old days there of how forests were managed, they really weren't managed. It was just kind of come in, do some clear cuts, move on, and don't worry about replanting anything. But, I mean, that is clearly not the way that forests are managed today. And also, there's that balance of jobs. I mean, that we are part of the natural environment, even though some environmentalists may not like to hear that. We're part of that environment, and we need to be able to have jobs. We need to be able to sustain our own self. And so I think that that's very admirable that you guys are taking that track.
Well, there are a variety of opinions on how our forests were managed in the past. But certainly as time has gone on, forestry has changed, forest products has changed. And this isn't your father's or your grandfather's forest products industry. I think one thing that people can argue, or a lot of people would believe, is that the pendulum has swung too far to the left, where,
yes,
timber harvests, compared, to 20, 30 years ago, have declined by, 90%. Other types of activities that need to be done, such as salvaging after a catastrophic wildfire, are very hard to do. And so, where we stand is it's time to swing the pendulum back maybe not to, you know, the 60s, 70s, or the 50s, but to a place where we're sustainably harvesting timber.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing what needs to be done to make sure that these forests are thriving and around for future generations, and that we restore the health of our rural communities, because as forest management activities have gone away, timber harvest, we have rural communities that continue to suffer from chronic unemployment and poverty.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
And in communities, that are, frankly dominated by federal land ownership,
yep.
Really the only opportunity, to get people back to work is to find those opportunities that are found on federal forest land.
Yeah, and the environmental tourism is not exactly panning out the way that they think it thought it would, I should say. All right, let's take a break right there. We're talking with Nick Smith, the Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, up next. We'll take a look at Senator Wyden's scheme for the ONC lands. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Nick Smith. He's Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, a new organization that we want to notify you guys about. And coming up in this segment, I'd like to talk about one of the new plans that are out there. This is Senator Wyden's plan to overhaul the ONC forest lands. And ONC is Oregon and California. These are old railroad that were deeded to Oregon and California. So why don't you kind of get us up to speed a little bit in terms of what those are, why we have access to those, and then, of course, what Ron's plan is for all that.
Okay, well, ONC obviously is a big issue in Oregon. And when we talk about the ONC lands, we're talking about, the 2.6 million acres of federal forest land that is pretty much all in western Oregon. And, the difference between ONC lands and say, national forest lands is that ONC lands were never really intended to be part of the national forest system. They were formerly, private lands that were owned by old railroad companies that were essentially revested to the federal government early in the last century. In 1937, Congress passed a law called the ONC Act, which kept these lands under federal control, but specifically mandated that these lands be managed for permanent timber production. So, Western Oregon in particular, you have these counties that, in some areas, up to 75% of the land base is controlled by the federal government. So these counties have a big stake in how these lands are managed. When you hear about ONC, you hear about county revenue. When timber is produced off of these lands, counties essentially keep 3/4 of the revenue. They put a portion back into the management of the lands, but certainly ONC is a big source of revenue for rural county governments. Fast forward to the 1990s, we have the spotted owl crisis. As we've seen elsewhere, timber harvests on ONC lands decreased considerably. That's why you continue to hear about county government struggling, rural economy struggling, and so forth. So, over the past 10, 15 years, there's been a lot of tension on this issue and what can be done to bring some balance to this issue so that we can get back to the original mandate where timber is being produced, where revenue is being generated for county governments. And, people have a lot of ideas, a lot of different ideas. One idea that we supported in the previous Congress was the ONC Trust Conservation and Jobs Act, which would have established a large portion of the ONC lands for permanent timber production to be managed in a trust by Oregonians. That passed the House twice. However, it could not get through the Senate, and that was because
big
Senator
surprise.
Ron Wyden opposed it and had his own ideas for what should be done on these lands. So the citizens who are following this issue, either casually or intensely, will hear Senator Wyden say that he wants to double timber harvest on ONC lands. That he wants to get the cut up. And what I would say is people should you know, listen to his actions, or listen to his words, but, you know, also take a look at his bill. Because when you take a closer look at his bill, the rhetoric, you know, does not match what he's trying to do. Senator Wyden's bill essentially took the same approach as the House bill in that, you know, it does set aside some land for conservation and you know, another portion for timber production. However, Senator Wyden's plan uses an ecological forestry concept that, one, has never been effectively applied, and two, when it's applied to a forestry landscape, you know, by the time you put in these forestry prescriptions, an independent analysis indicates that, you know, what it'll result in is actually lower timber harvest than what we have today.
Wow. Why does that not surprise me? You know, we're coming up on a break. Let's take our break a little bit early, because I'd like to talk to you in terms of what's going on the east side of the mountains. That's national forest land over there. So everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Nick Smith of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Nick Smith. He's the Executive Director of Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, an organization that is looking to restore some balance and common sense, really, to our approach on environmental issues here within Oregon. And, you know, just real quick, are you guys in other states other than Oregon, or are you just Oregon-centric?
We operate throughout the Pacific Northwest.
You do?
So
okay.
We work from Northern California, you know, through Oregon, Washington State, over to Idaho and Western Montana.
Oh.
We're actually starting to expand to other parts of the country, such as the Great Lakes area, the Rocky Mountains, the South, where, you know, interestingly, you know, a lot of these issues are the same, where you have, you know, the decline of management of federal forest lands. You know, the impact on rural communities, and what we're working to is building a national coalition that can support the passage of comprehensive legislation.
So speaking of other areas, over on the east side of the mountains, as I said going into the break, that's national forest land. What are some reforms that your organization think needs to happen over there?
Well, if you go to the east side of Oregon, which are predominantly national forests, the issues, as your listeners out there, you know, would understand, are a little different in that the federal forests on the east side are in such bad shape, are so vulnerable to catastrophic wildfire that, you know, there's great consensus among, you know, a more diverse group of folks that something needs to be done on a larger scale to, you know, one, save these forests from catastrophic events, and two, to generate the wood, the raw material, to keep what's left of the forest products infrastructure in place. Because as we've seen in other areas of the country, such as Arizona, New Mexico, when your forests are in really bad shape and you have no forest products infrastructure, it becomes very difficult and very expensive to restore forests, and not to mention support rural economies. And so, you know, on the east side and in certain places, there is more momentum in terms of collaboration, where a wide variety of folks, whether it's county officials, you know, timber industry, you know, even, you know, moderate conservationists, there's broader agreement on what needs to be done on the ground in these forests.
Hmm.
However, you know, though there's some progress being made in terms of you know, developing these projects to be done, we're still seeing the same problems that plague, you know, forest projects you know, throughout the country, and that is the environmental litigation, the obstruction, the federal analysis paralysis.
Yes.
That is a result of this litigation, you know, has really served to bottle up, you know, what progress is being made on the east side. You know, the big example on the east side is the Snow Basin project, a huge project in northeastern Oregon that, you know, would promise to restore an enormous swath of land. And that was a place where there was some agreement among stakeholders that forests need to be brought back to their natural state and resiliency. There was even agreement on cutting larger trees that would maybe not be done otherwise, but yet environmental litigants wading in the weeds, basically jumped in and stopped.
The weeds is a good descriptor of those guys. We only got about 3 minutes here with you, but I want to get in two questions if I can. First of all, there's a big push by many Western states to get the federal government out of state-owned lands. Our next guest, Ken Ivory, is really spearheading this. What's your organization's stance on this?
Well, I would say that the push to transfer federal lands to the states really speaks to the frustration that many Westerners are feeling about how these lands are managed.
Absolutely.
And I agree with a lot of the points that Representative Ivory makes and others. My approach is a little different in that we're trying to see what can be done in Congress to bring back some active management to federal lands, give local communities a greater say in how these lands are managed. And so, I think that what we're doing, supports what we're doing, what Representative Ivory is doing, I think ultimately reaches the goal is that, getting local citizens back to work on the lands, restoring the health of the forests and restoring our rural communities.
Great points. And, some management is certainly better than the mismanagement that's occurring now. So let's say that we do start taking control of these lands, whether it is through the states or through the federal government. What's the infrastructure like right now? I mean, do we even have that in order to get to really increase our logging? I mean, are there enough sawmills and roads and power lines and skilled workers and so forth to handle all of that increased logging?
Well, I think the infrastructure is in place. I think as time goes on, there's a greater risk of losing that infrastructure.
Yes.
I think the workforce is there, even though in certain parts of the forest products industry, there's a need for skilled workers. I think what it comes down to is the laws that are in place. I was at a meeting recently with the Idaho state forester, and he made the point that, if he was given control of these federal lands, if he was forced to manage these lands under federal laws, he wouldn't, his state just wouldn't be able to do it. Mm. And his point is that, we need reforms in some form that address the litigation, that brings down the costs of preparing and implementing timber projects. And that's why states have been more successful in managing trust lands, and because they operate under a different set of laws, different set of mandates. And so, whether these lands are in federal control, whether they're in state control, there needs to be sanity in these management laws if we're ever going to bring things back.
Yeah, absolutely. Sanity is exactly what's needed. Nick, I want to thank you so much for your time today. And I want to make sure that we definitely check in with you sometime in the near future.
I'd love to come back.
Absolutely. Lots to talk about. And everyone stay with us. Up next, we will have Representative Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council and the effort to retake those state lands. And we'll also address some of the concerns that are happening down in Southern Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, and we're shifting gears now, talking to Representative Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council and the effort to retake state lands. Ken, it's always great to talk to you.
Mark, it's good to be back on with you.
Yeah, so let's go around the states and get some updates in terms of what's going on with some of these other member states that you're working with.
Well, a lot is happening this year. I think there were probably more than 50 different pieces of transfer public lands related legislation.
Wow.
Throughout the western states. And in addition to that, there were resolutions been passed and still pending in a number of states east of Colorado, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, South Carolina have all passed resolutions supporting the transfer of public lands to western states because, Mark, get this, they're starting to realize that they're paying billions of dollars a year for the federal government to mismanage our lands and burn up our forests.
Yeah, isn't that astounding?
They're getting tired of it.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah,
it really is. This is one of the most epic environmental disasters, I think, in history. We're burning up 5 million acres a year of renewable forests that used to fund education, public mm-hmm. safety. You'd have the productive use of the forest that kept the forest healthy and productive. And now it's a liability. It's neither healthy nor productive. It's polluting and killing animals and destroying watershed.
Wow. So in terms of, I know that you have a recent article out there on North Dakota that was just published in Breitbart, and of course we'll make sure that we link that up. Why don't you kind of walk us through the essence of that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the primary arguments that people throw out to say that the western states should not be treated equally with states east of Colorado is that somehow the western states, you know, these rugged westerners that came out to inhospitable lands so they could have property and liberty and self-governance, right? They say that their first act of statehood was to give up vast majorities of their land. And they point to a few cherry-picked words out of the Enabling Act, which are word for word the same as the language in the Enabling Act, the statehood agreement, if you will, of states like North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Louisiana. In fact, Oregon has the same language in statehood as Illinois and Missouri and Iowa and Florida. And yet they say somehow the language of our Enabling Act, our statehood agreements, means that we just gave up the land, we didn't want it. I mean, it really is ridiculous. It flies in the face of common sense and the very foundational principles of our nation, where, you know, the Supreme Court said a year and a half ago, our nation was and is a union of states equal in dignity, power, and authority. But, you know, Oregon's not equal in dignity, power, and authority with Iowa or Kansas that control their own land and generate revenue from the land to provide public services. You guys are unable to fund education or public safety in many of your counties anymore because of these restrictions.
Well, thank goodness, though, that we have the federal government to give us what amounts to county welfare payments, rather than us going out and actually earning it out in the woods by harvesting a completely renewable resource, we get the federal welfare payments.
Yeah, and when you think about that, you know, the scripturally, the debtor is servant to the lender, and Benjamin Franklin said, "Think what you do when you run in debt, you give another power over your liberty." And when you're dependent on those kinds of transfer payments from our friends in the East, the ability to exploit the Western states is almost complete. Last year alone, in order to secure the PILT payments, the payment in lieu of the taxes that states east of Colorado generate, so payment in lieu of taxes or PILT, in order to secure $400 million in PILT payment to Western states, they had to agree to an additional $200 billion in food stamp payments in the Farm Bill. And so that kind of exploitation really affects the very fundamental equality of the functioning of our republic. And you know, that's raw politics, but until we restore that balance, we're going to be facing political exploitation on any number of fronts because of that inequity.
Well, and it's not just a matter of inequity, but really it speaks to the heart of the free market system to begin with. And really, part of the reason why the United States was formed was due to economic slavery to the king. That's really why America was settled the way that it was, is because it represented opportunity. It represented moving away from the king. And after the United States was formed, it was throwing open the doors to a society, really, that had been bound to where everything is essentially the king's. And now you had a chance to go out and earn it yourself. You had a chance to own land. You had a chance to make your fortune. And it's sad that we have moved away from that history.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Mark. But it's the nature and disposition of men, and therefore of government, to amass unbridled power, and those that have come earlier and got theirs to control and oppress, if you will, those that come later. The story you're relating in the founding of the nation, where Parliament and the king were oppressing the colonies. Well, then, shortly after the nation was formed, and then they started moving west, Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, you know, that great western state of Florida, they were 90% federally controlled lands for decades. And it was the same thing. I mean, they said, oh, you westerners aren't sophisticated enough. You know, by westerners, they meant Illinois and Florida and Louisiana and Missouri. You're not sophisticated enough to manage your own lands. And so they were controlled federally, and they had to rally together, band together, fight, if you will, and secure control of their land. Well, it's the same story now. So now you've got political numbers east of Colorado, and they say, oh, you Westerners aren't able to control and manage your own land. We're going to lord it over you. It's the exact same story. It's human nature repeating itself. And unless and until we are willing to stand up and battle for those fundamental rights that are the fundamental rights and heritage of being American, yeah. Liberty, property, self-governance, we're going to continue to be controlled over by those in the East. And it's a matter of simply standing up for the constitutional equality of the states.
Yeah, and what is so silly about all of this, too, is essentially we are giving control over our lands here in Oregon and these other Western states to somebody out in Connecticut or New York, New Jersey, and they've never even visited them and have no clue what it's like to be out here. Let's go ahead and take a break right here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Representative Ken Ivory of American Lands Council. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to address some of the concerns that we've heard from listeners, and then also we're going to talk about a new Bundy Ranch style of confrontation that's happening right now in Southern Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Representative Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council and his effort to help the states retake the lands that is currently held by the federal government. And, you know, I want to address something that was brought up in the last segment because it totally didn't connect with me. You're talking about the sale of Arizona lands. And when you said that, I was thinking kind of like the sale of lands here in Oregon that are held by the feds. And they're not really selling the land. What they're actually doing is they're kind of essentially selling the timber rights on that land. So can take us back to that. So what exactly is happening in Arizona, and are they actually selling the land to these foreign entities?
Well, apparently it's worse than that. They're just simply granting them, it seems, in the National Defense Authorization Act that was reauthorized this year. There is apparently a land swap deal that gives very rich copper reserves to some foreign companies. Coming out of the federal government. So, I mean, when you think of a federal government that's $18 trillion in debt, yeah, and increasing by $1 trillion a year, to think that they're not going to be using the substantial assets and resources locked up in the federally controlled lands to bail themselves out is kind of naive. I mean, it's happening already.
Mm. Wow. That is actually really shocking. So a couple of things here. We have some concerns from a listener that this came to us. And they've expressed some real concerns about the rationale and benefits of transferring ownership from the feds back to the states. In particular, they said that if Oregon were to own the national forests and wilderness areas and open them up to development, there would be an increase in tax revenue, obviously. But at what cost? The loss of our national parks and protected wilderness lands? Why would Oregon even want the BLM land? They, for the most part, have little to no potential revenue. So what would your response be to that?
Well, there's a report that came out just a few weeks ago by the Property Environmental Research Center that really completely refutes that statement. They seem to have no real economic value in the hands of the federal government because it's managed absentee and they don't track revenue to expense. But in the hands of so where the federal government loses 27 cents an acre managing public lands, multiple use lands, the states generate $14.50 an acre positive net revenue in the millions of acres of public land that states already manage. So yeah, I mean, states can't afford to manage it the way the federal government does, but they can't afford not to manage it the way that states already do, with more local control, more responsive and responsible and accountable management.
Well, from that same person, because it really seemed like their concerns were the development of our natural resources, and I think that is where they're getting hung up on things, is this notion of development. And I don't know if they're picturing in their mind that these wilderness areas are suddenly going to have hotels and golf courses slapped down in the middle of them, or maybe some chemical plants dropped in there, or heaven forbid, some coal-fired power plants. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what their concerns are in terms of development and whether or not they understand what that is. But they did go on to say, I can only hope that Oregonians are not so short-sighted to exchange our natural heritage for a few bucks. So again, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, you know. And that really begs the question, are Oregonians short-sighted, and are they more short-sighted than federal bureaucrats that are unelected and unaccountable? The real question is, do Oregonians and Arizonans and Utahns and others believe that they can and should govern themselves? And when
That's
they
right.
have these very legitimate interests, very legitimate, right? Environmental protection. Right now, 5 million acres are burning. It's one of the greatest environmental catastrophes. The federal government is one of the largest, if not the largest, polluter in the nation with all of the NOx and SOx and volatile organic compounds and mercury and PM 2.5 and PM 10 that come off of the 5 million acres of forest that are burning. So the question is, you've got very serious, legitimate environmental concerns, economic concerns, access concerns, preserving heritage sites. Those are all legitimate interests. Who better to balance that for Oregon than the people that know Oregon best? Oregonians, right? Rather than 528 members of Congress that aren't from Oregon, or worse yet, bureaucracies, federal bureaucracies that don't know your climate and your geography and your geology and your culture and your industry, that you have no accountability for. So that really is the fundamental question. Who should tend the garden that is Oregon?
Yes.
Oregonians or someone that is absentee with thousands, if not millions or billions of other concerns around the world?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point because, you know, like I said previously, is that having people in Connecticut or New York or New Jersey or, you know, wherever, they don't even understand what a mountain really is. I mean, they may have seen pictures of it, but I can guarantee you, having lived in the western side of New York, as far away from New York City as possible and still being in the state of New York, I can guarantee you I really didn't have a concept of what a mountain actually looked like. And they have what are called mountains in New York. But they are nothing in comparison to like looking at Mount Hood or Mount Jefferson and even really understanding the vast amount, the huge expanse of lands that is out there. I just don't think that people that live inside the brick walls, the brick canyons of a city out in the greater New York metropolitan area, they really don't understand what that is like.
Yeah, and fundamentally, that's why states are able to generate positive net revenue from the millions of acres of public land they already manage, because they know the land, they're on site, they're accountable and responsive, rather than a one-size-fails-all policy.
Yeah.
Canada has already been doing this. Canada has been devolving, transferring land, water, and resource control and management and ownership to the provinces and territories over the last decade, because they realize that in order to celebrate diversity, those who are closest to the land and the resources make better decisions,
yes,
than those that are absentee far away.
Absolutely right. I mean, we've often said here on this show is that the best environmentalist is a farmer. And when your livelihood depends on the quality of your land and you know, whether you're a rancher or whatnot, or you need to grow crops, I mean, you're going to make sure that land is absolutely as profitable as possible.
For the long term.
Yeah.
As well.
Absolutely.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, that those whose lives and livelihoods depend upon the land are going to be more responsible for the long term. And then, you know, Oregonians, just like Utahns, we value our open spaces for a number of things, both for the aesthetic, spiritual, peaceful healing properties, but it's also one of our largest industries in Utah is tourism. And so to think that in Utah we don't comprehend the nature of our beautiful, you know, the scenic beauties that we have. And so there are places on one side of the spectrum that absolutely deserve very heightened protection. And in fact, in the transfer of public lands bills in Utah and that are pending in other states, those types of lands are off the table. We're not even talking about those. We're talking about multiple use lands, primarily Forest Service and BLM type lands that have the potential under local management to be both healthy and productive, whereas right now under increasing federal control, access is restricted. Thousands and thousands of roads are being shut down. You have it happening in Oregon as we do in Utah and elsewhere. Access is being restricted. The health of the land is absolutely abysmal, and productivity is depressed.
Yeah. And the reverse of that, too, is that if you're concerned about development, then it's Oregon making that decision. Because you think about it, what's to stop the federal government to come in right now and saying, yeah, you know what, instead of all this wilderness land, who needs that crap? We're going to throw up some power plants and we're going to, because that's the exact issue. I mean, that is what it boils down to, is who is going to control those decisions.
Well, and it's a complete misnomer to think that there's not development happening on public land right now.
Yeah.
There's oil and gas development and mineral development and renewable energy development. There's all sorts of things happening. In the federal hands, it's happening unprofitably people that need federal political payback, rather than being managed and governed by those whose lives and livelihoods depend upon the land.
Absolutely right. So it comes down to who do you really want making those decisions. All right, let's take a break right here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Representative Ken Ivory coming up. We're going to be talking about that Bundy Ranch-style situation happening in Southern Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. We're talking today to Representative Ken Ivory with the American Lands Council. And I'd just like to say, you've no doubt heard the saying, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Well, then, calling all patriots, Saturday, June 20th is a chance for good men and women to do something. The second annual Rally Around the Flag event will be at the fairgrounds in Cottage Grove, that's south of Eugene. Ken Ivory, our guest today, will be there to talk about the transfer of public lands to the states. Jeff Kropf of Oregon Capital Watch will MC the event, and Ken Ivory will also be joined by Noah Wall of Freedom Works. He's their grassroots director. David Honeycutt of Oregonians in Action. And don't miss the panel discussion where you can get your questions answered about how all of this can work, which I'll be moderating. So I look forward to seeing you there Saturday, June 20th. This is a free event. For more details, head to iSpyRadio.com and look for today's show page. That's show 516. So, Ken, I'm looking forward to seeing you in June.
Oh, it's always great to be in Oregon. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, and what a beautiful state.
Oh, it sure is. It truly is. And, I can appreciate that listener's concerns about just coming in and overdeveloping some of these wilderness areas. But again, it does come down to who is going to make those decisions. And so let's address some concerns also of miners regarding the transfer of public lands. Right now, they see Oregon is the Oregon State Legislature. Legislature is the problem. The only government entity that's effectively protecting them, sort of, is the federal government. Oregon, if it had been left up to them, would have come in and basically stripped away these mining rights altogether. But the federal mining claim is the one that's essentially preventing them from doing that. And so the concern by some of the miners is that if we do transfer this back to the state, they may lose those federal claims. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, every state that's working on this starts from the premise of federal public lands become state public lands for multiple use, sustained yield, with local planning, and that you carry over status quo all valid existing rights like mining and grazing and access and hunting and fishing and those sorts of things. And so that's the premise that everyone's working on, and in different states, we're working on the substantive mechanisms to do that. But part of the premise of that statement is that the federal government is going to protect those rights, where what you have happening right in Oregon right now seems to be, the BLM coming in and threatening to burn down the buildings of miners and disregard claims and ignore them. We're seeing that in many ways throughout the West. In Alaska, they had the Pebble Canyon mines situation where they wouldn't even allow them to apply for a permit shutting down mining. So to think that those controlling the federal agencies are friends to miners doesn't seem to be borne out by the what's actually happening on the ground. And so you've always got a better opportunity when you're governing yourself closest to home, and that's really part of the underlying foundation of this whole effort.
And I think that's a great point, because right now there is a current issue happening down in Southern Oregon. This is in Josephine County, and there's a new kind of Bundy Ranch sort of standoff that's happening. Oregon Oath Keepers are already there on site. There are some people coming in from out of state that have them a little concerned. But this has the potential to be a real powder keg. And essentially what is happening is the BLM, that's the federal government, so again, don't think that they're your friends. The BLM is attempting to seize control of the Galise Mining District, basically because we said so. And so the BLM is saying that these miners don't really have the rights, but that's simply not the case. These miners have rights dating back to the 1870s, so they have very preeminent claim on the surface mining rights. And so the people don't think this is a small issue. The mining area at the center of the dispute has reportedly more than 10 million ounces, has produced more than 10 million ounces in gold since panning began. And geologists actually estimate that is only about 10% of the gold that exists in that area. So, this is a huge issue. And obviously, here we are once again, the BLM swooping in to try to take control of these natural resources.
Yeah, that really is the point, isn't it? When you look all around the West, it seems that wherever there's an endangered species issue, the issues that you're seeing now with this mining district in Josephine County, it always centers around an area of tremendous resource. I don't think it's a coincidence. Again, when you've got a federal government that's $18 trillion in debt, there may be something concerted at play to lock up resources from local control, from productivity. The thing that was so sad, Mark, traveling in Oregon quite a bit over the last couple of years, you used to have some of the best funded schools in the nation. You had some of the best funded public safety departments in the nation, and now they're struggling. I mean, you've got sheriffs that are telling people, hey, if you've got domestic abuse situations, you may want to go live somewhere else because we can't protect you. We can't fund public safety. We can't fund education. And yet you have such abundant resource being locked up by our own federal partners. It really defies logic and common sense.
It does. And, that's in that very area we're talking about. This is Josephine County. It made national news when a 911 call came in and the dispatcher was helpless. She didn't have anybody that she could send. And so while this woman was being attacked, she just basically stayed on the phone with her trying to, find some kind of solution, whether or not she could slip out the back door. I mean, it's horrifying to think that this is where we have devolved to, because simply we will not harvest these natural resources that we have been given access to.
Right. And, those are the master resources in any economy, whether it's you're going to go to a renewable energy economy, you still have to have the resources to build and develop that physical equipment to deliver the power. I mean, everything starts with resources. And the fact that our nation, our federal partner, seems to have a policy that is absolutely hostile to resource. The forest is the greatest example. We have federal policies that would rather burn up
Yes.
the renewable resource, pollute the air, destroy the water, and kill the animals, than allow it to be used where the carbon is sequestered in homes and products, and it creates vibrant, funded communities that can educate children and take care of people and keep them safe.
Yeah.
It's absolutely astounding.
It is astounding, and unfortunately right now, some of the efforts, there was in fact a bill introduced here in the Oregon legislature. I don't think it ever made it out of committee, and as I understand it, it's basically dead in the water. So what can people be doing in terms of getting involved with American Lands Council and really trying to continue to push that up the hill?
Well, I'm not discouraged at all that you had bills that made it to committee in Oregon. Think about that alone. The fact that you are having the discussions in Salem, that's the starting point. And so
yes.
What people can do, very, very simple, right? Number one, tell your friends. Go on the American Lands Council website, AmericanLandsCouncil.org, Facebook page, American Lands Council. Take that information, share it with your friends. Tell someone. How hard is that? Tell someone. All kinds of resources and materials, tell someone. Second thing they can do, tell your leaders. Repeatedly, persistently, tell your leaders you expect them to be like Thomas Hart Benton, the Democrat senator from Missouri back in the 1850s when Missouri and its neighboring states were 90% federally controlled. He said, I refuse to take no for an answer. He said, I resolve to move against the whole system. And he went to battle for changing this system of disposing of the public lands.
Yeah.
The third, so tell someone, tell your leaders. The third thing is, open doors. There are individuals, groups, organizations that are struggling for answers to this environmental degradation, to secure better access, health, productivity, to secure vibrant communities. They're looking for these answers. And we really believe, and many others that have come on board, this is the only solution big
yes.
enough
yeah. and,
for
and,
better
and,
access, better health, better productivity. So open doors to those people. Put us in touch with them so we can start moving this forward and grow the numbers, grow the support, and continue to move forward.
Yes, and clearly doing nothing is not going to solve anything. Ken, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Mark, it's always my pleasure. Thanks for all you're doing, and congratulations, Dr. Mark.
All right, thank you so much. We'll see you in June.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. You know what Ken was talking about there was, yes, I am now officially wrapped up with the academic side of my doctorate program, although I am ABD, which means all but dissertation. Like I said at the top of the show, knowledge is an infinitely deep mine, and we do hope that you'll take the information that we've shared today and use it. Join Ken's organization, American Lands Council, and Nick Smith's organization, Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities, and you can help win the fight because you're better informed. Because like we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.